Shri Shri Madhavai Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Shri Shri Madhavai Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada Thakur Ki Jai Shri Madhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 11.
Suta uvacha ityupamantrito ragya gunanu katane hare rishikesham manusmritya Devaktum prachakrame ityupamantrito ragya gunanu katane hare rishikesham manusmritya devaktum prachakrame.
Sutta Uvacha, Sutta Goswami said, iti, thus, upamantritaha, being requested, ragya, by the king, guna anukattane, in describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord. Hare, of the personality of Godhead.
Rishikesham,
the master of the senses.
Anusmritya,
properly remembering.
Pratyavaktum,
just to reply.
Prachakrame,
executed the preliminaries. Sutta Goswami said, when Shukadeva Goswami was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energy of the personality of Godhead, he then systematically remembered the master of the senses, Sri Krishna, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. So let's look at the word-for-word translation again. Sutta Uvacha, Sutta Goswami said, Iti upa mantrita ragya. So iti, thus, upa mantrita, being requested, ragya, by the king. So those are the verses leading up to this. The king asks several questions regarding gunakatane hare, in describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord Hari. And then the second half, Rishikesham Anusmritya. So Shukadev Goswami, before replying, remembers Rishikesh, the master of the senses. Rishikesham Anusmritya Pratyavaktum Prachakrame. And just to reply, Pratyavaktum Prachakrame, executed the preliminaries. So that's what's coming up. How many verses are there? Of course, there's Pushkar. He knows how many verses there are in prayers. They're coming up. Nama parasmai purushai abhu yase sadhud bhavastana nirodha lilaya. It's at least 12, maybe 20. It's a big chunk. And every time I read this, I'm thinking of like 12 different new things to say about this verse and purport. So let's jump in. Well, the Bhagavatam in general, and the second canto in particular, it's very exciting what's going on. The characters that are involved here, Sutta Goswami speaking, the last chapter was all directed to Sutta Goswami. It was the sages at Naimisharanya, represented by Shonaka Rishi, saying, we really like what you're talking about. We want to hear more. What's the use of a life without hearing about Krishna? What's the use of eyes that don't see the form of Krishna? They're just like eyes on a peacock feather. What's the use of a head that doesn't bow down before the Lord? Such a head is just a heavy burden on the shoulders. What else is in there? The hands that don't engage in service to the Lord are just like hands on a dead body, even though they're decorated with glittering bangles. And then he concludes by saying, and what good is a life if all of these things that you do don't melt your heart when you hear about Krishna? Such a heart is said to be steel-framed. So they're saying, we want to hear. A lifetime, the sun, rising and setting of the sun takes away the duration of life, except for one who's hearing about Krishna. And so they're proving what Sutta Goswami is doing. He's speaking to them. So there's a lot of drama in there. There's a lot of emotion. Bhagavatam spends a lot of time describing all of this. And I was seeing how the questions and answers are very important, but the Bhagavatam gives even more importance to the personalities. How much time was spent in the first canto describing who Maharaj Parikshit is? And then here again in this chapter, it says Maharaj Parikshit has a natural affection for Krishna because he saw him in the womb. And just this morning I was thinking for the first time, Maharaj Parikshit saw Krishna in the womb. There's no record of him getting direct relationship with Krishna. And the same thing was Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami also had some, while within the womb, He didn't see any reason to leave. He was already fully realized. And only upon hearing the instructions of Krishna to his mother, he said, okay, now I've got a reason to come out. They both spent their whole life hearing about Krishna. And that was their connection, their only connection. And Srimad Bhagavatam is full of people making mistakes. And like Maharaj Parikshit, there's a lot described about his character, how he was such a perfect person, how he was a perfect king, but he made a little mistake due to anger. One little mistake put the snake around the neck of Shaunaka Rishi. And later on, he regretted it. So we make mistakes in our life, and how we deal with them shows our character. Some people will deny, no, I didn't make a mistake, or they'll blame someone else. But we see how Maharaj Parikshit, he fully owned it. He said, yes, that was wrong. I don't know why I did that. I hope I never do such a thing again. I hope I get punished right away. I hope Krishna directs things in my life so that I'll never do something so foolish again. And so it was almost in relief when he heard, you're going to die in 7 days. So like we, all of us, our days are numbered. We don't know when we're going to come down into only 4 digits of numbers. And when we're down to 100 days left, we don't know. All of a sudden, here's this young man who had 5 digits. 5 digits means, at least I did the math, 5 digits means 10,000, means at least 27 years. Here's a young man. He had at least 27 years to go. He had a lot on his odometer, a lot of time left. But all of a sudden, nope, you're down to single digits. Just like that. Okay. And so how does he reply? How does he respond to that? That's what the Bhagavatam is all about. So a lot about his character is described in this book. Earlier on in this chapter, it said he had a natural affection for Krishna because he had that contact in the womb. And also his grandfather was a very dear friend of Krishna. His grandfather was Arjuna. And imagine if your grandfather was a close friend to, say, Frank Lloyd Wright or Einstein, and so you would have like some interest in architecture or physics. You'd be kind of curious, like, well, what is Einstein all about? He was really good friends with my grandfather. And so your study of physics would be not just study of physics, but like, who is this person that was such a close friend to my father, my grandfather, who said all these nice things about him? So Maharaj Parikshit was like practically a family member of Krishna. They were related. Arjuna was a cousin to Krishna. And so of the 5 things mentioned later on in the 7th canto that are natural, after seeing Shishupal being killed and the soul coming out, merging into Krishna, Yudhishthira was asking, how did that happen? And Narada Muni says, because he was so fixed, always thinking of Krishna anger. So then there's anger, fear, apparent lust, familial affection, and by practice. He gives 5 things that cause this kind of spontaneous emotional affection. And so we're in the 5th one. We're practicing, trying to develop an emotional affection for Krishna. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is. It's a very, it's a study, but it's not just like Prabhupada uses the word dry. It's not a dry study. It's experiential. As you read about Krishna entering into Dwarka in the 1st canto, So he's walking in, and everyone's coming out to greet him, and there's a description of all the varieties of people and how Krishna's responding to each of them, and then the beautiful description of how there's a fan waving over the chamara fan over him, there's a white umbrella, there's a garland of flowers, and it's compared to a dark cloud with a rainbow and the moon and the rain. Remember that one?
Swans.
Sometimes swans. But I think in that one, this is lightning. And that was compared to his yellow dhoti. So you got this beautiful scene and describing Krishna poetically, and then people are rushing out to see him, like the senses rush out to greet the objects of the senses, like when awakening from sleep. So it's an experiential thing. You're right there. You're seeing these things. It's not just a study. And so we're about to go into some very technical information. But first, there's got to be this emotional activity. So now, Shukadeva Goswami, who is he? He just walks in, and he's completely renounced from the world. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't even have pockets to put anything in. Maharaj Pariksit is about to leave this world. He's trying to cultivate detachment from the world by cultivating attachment to Krishna. And Shukadeva Goswami is, out of all of the great people there, this is the one. Yeah, he's the one. He's the one that should speak to you. Earlier on when, let's see, who is it that offers that prayer? Let me offer my obeisances to the son of Srila Vyasadeva who can enter into the hearts of all. Where is that? Is that?
Second
chapter. So it's when Sutta Goswami.
One, two, two.
One, two, two.
That's Sutta Goswami.
Sutta Goswami starting to speak. He's been asked the questions, so he does the same thing described here, prativaktum prachakrame. So just to reply, prachakrame. He executed the preliminaries. He showed respect to the previous people. He's recognizing everything I know, I've learned from Shukadeva Goswami. And so now Shukadeva Goswami is also going to do this. Purport. I'll read the verse one more time. Sutta Goswami said, when Shukadeva Goswami was thus requested by the king to describe the creative energy of the personality of Godhead, he then systematically remembered the master of the sense, Sri Krishna, and to reply properly, he spoke thus. Purport. The devotees of the Lord, while delivering speeches and describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord, do not think that they can do anything independently. They think that they can speak only what they are induced to speak by the Supreme Lord, the master of the senses. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord and that they can be properly used when they are employed for the service of the Lord. The senses are instruments, and elements are ingredients, all endowed by the Lord. Therefore, whatever an individual can do, speak, see, etc., is under the direction of the Lord only. The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, confirms this. Sarvasya chaham ridesan avishto matasmritir jnanam apohanam cha. No one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act, or eat, or speak. And by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects, typical of the conditioned soul. Okay, so we talked about Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit, then taking it down another level, Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, how the sages there have expressed their hunger, their appetite, we want to hear. Maharaj Pariksit is in a situation where he's hungry, he wants to hear My life has been compromised. When we're put into situations, we become very anxious to hear about anything about Krishna to help make sense of our current situation, or to just rise above it and just look at it and say, well, it's all transient. And then going down another level, or down or up, however you want to look at it, a little closer to us, is Srila Prabhupada's situation while he's writing this. While reading the second canto, I've always wondered, where was he living? Did he write this while he was in India? And I've talked with Jayadvaita Maharaj, and he wasn't entirely clear himself where, but later on, coming up, is a verse where it talks about traveling on a boat. And in that purport, Prabhupada speaks a lot about when you're on a boat, the water, it's very dangerous. And he talks about a lot of things, such as the fog that he encountered. When he landed in Boston, if you've studied the Jaladutta diary that he kept while he was on that ship, lands in Boston, he walks around, wow, this is America. Gets back on the ship, he writes that poem that we all know about, begging Krishna, please make my power of speech suitable for their understanding. Then, in his diary, he says, we're stuck. There's such a heavy fog, the ship can't move. We only have a little ways to go to New York, but we can't go anywhere because the fog is so thick. And the captain said it's very dangerous to travel through this fog. So I forget how long they had to sit. It was like maybe 24 hours, something like that. And then finally, the fog lifts. They're able to go. He arrives in New York. So in the purport to that verse that's coming up, he talks a lot about it, and it seems like he's talking about crossing the ocean. If one crosses the ocean, one sees that there's a lot of dangers there. So it appears that he wrote that purport after arriving in New York. Difficult to say. He had written the first three volumes of the first canto in India. Then he was very involved in preaching and trying to develop things. Then he wrote the Light of the Bhagavat, and an attempt to go to Japan for that conference. So he was busy with other writing. He was busy with trying to get to America, or get to England, get to anywhere. Then America opened up. So whether in India or in America, reading this purport and thinking of Prabhupada's situation, the devotees of the Lord, while delivering speeches and describing the transcendental attributes of the Lord, do not think that they can do anything independently. They think that they can speak only what they are induced to speak by the Supreme Lord, the master of the senses. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord and that they can be properly used when they are employed for the service of the Lord. So many of you are old-time book distributors, and you know, you must have the same experience I have. You go out and nothing at all is happening, and you feel completely hopeless and useless, and it looks impossible to induce anyone to take a book, a Bhagavad Gita, a Srimad Bhagavatam. And then somewhere in the depths of despair, you think something in the lines of what we just read. All right, Krishna, I'm out here on your behalf. These are your books. These are your people. You put the words in my mouth, and then all of a sudden, it's just entirely different. I could look at anyone from across the parking lot or the airport or anywhere and just catch their eye, and they start walking right toward me. And it's like they got their hands out and they're just asking, how much is that book? It's magic. Just like he says in the very last sentence here, no one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. And by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects, typical of the conditioned soul. So we all have some experience of this where you're on book distribution and you just feel the magic coming out of your fingertips and like, how am I doing this? I don't know where this is coming from. And then as soon as you think, I'm really cool, now I know how to do this, it's gone. And Krishna just pulls the plug, just like Arjuna expressed earlier on in the first canto. Now, I'm the same Arjuna, I got the same bow, but I can't do anything. I'm completely lost without Krishna. Then, speaking with Maharaj Yudhisthira, he puts himself back together again, and now I'm feeling strong again by remembering the instructions of Krishna. A devotee, also in our reading group, we've been studying the story of Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish, and the theme that comes up again and again in there, in the verses and in the purports, is that the devotee becomes the controller of the Lord. One who gives everything for the service of Krishna, Krishna comes under that person's control. And on book distribution, you see that. One devotee told me how he was at the Warp Tour, which is, I don't know how many stages with really loud music going on, and the manager of that tour likes the devotees. He gave them permission to go. And so they would travel all the way across the country going to the Warp Tours, distributing hundreds of books every day. So this devotee said he was there and surrounded by all of this sound and noise and distributing books and doing great, but he needed a little break, so he walked off to the side and went up a hill where he could overlook the whole thing and just kind of take a break for a few minutes. And looking out in that great big sea of people listening to music, he noticed one person walking toward him from across the crowd. It was just like, what, you know, like you're looking at a bunch of ants and then you see one ant just walking straight, and like, and he was walking right toward him, and he was wondering, what's this all about? And the person came up to him and said, you have something for me. I don't know what it is. But something told me you've got something for me. True story. And I've been to festivals with that devotee distributing books, and I've seen how he is like just clicked on all the time. Krishna is speaking through him. As soon as you take possession of anything, you restrict the flow. But if you just open it up and let Krishna come into you, let the words flow from you. This is interesting, this last sentence. I'll read it again. No one is free to act freely and independently, and as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act. And then this next one is interesting. Or eat. Or speak. Where did that come from? This verse doesn't say anything about eating. And now all of a sudden, Prabhupada just throws that in. But everything that we do, we seek the permission of the Lord, and by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects, typical of the conditioned soul. I was thinking at first he was speaking about that verse, Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikilashvapya vastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. How many of you know that verse? Do I need to translate it? Okay, a bunch of you know it, but Iha yasya Haridasi, one who is Haridas, one who is a servant of the Lord, karmana manasa gira, with his activities, so he talks about that, manasa, his mind, and vacha, his speech. Okay, here Prabhupada, instead of thoughts, he says eat. Okay, it's a little different. Karmana manasa vacha. Nikilashvapya vastasu jivan mukta sa uchate. Such a person is said to be a liberated soul, even within the body. Even in a material body, if all of your activities are for the service of Krishna, that body is no longer material, it becomes spiritual. And to act in that way, and yeah, book distributors, you know the feeling. Or are you like that all the time, Divyanga? Well, like when it's really flowing through you, like you just feel the magic happening, and you feel like you can control people. It's amazing. But as soon as you take ownership of it, it's gone. And working with devotees like Vaisheshika and others, when they're out at the airport or wherever they are, you see them doing that, and they're on all the time. Or like Divyanga said, you go through the motions. You've got to practice, and you do it because just by doing it, you'll arrive there. You go through the hard work doing it, even when you're not inspired to. So sometimes we may feel inspired to speak about Krishna, and sometimes we don't. But the austerity is to just keep doing it, to practice. And Srimad Bhagavatam is our practice. We keep reading the Bhagavatam, and it's our practice to develop a natural affection for Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit, he had this affection. What did it say earlier on about him? Was he the one that said, or is it, he would play with dolls. He would have dolls of Krishna. Is that Maharaj Parikshit? Okay, was that earlier on? Where did that come up?
Where's that come? No, that's in the first canto. It's
in the first canto, and in relation to what? So, who was speaking that? Was that Shanaka Rishi asking Sutta, tell us more about Maharaj Parikshit, we've heard that he is like this, or was it, anybody remember those? He's got the Sanskrit for it.
Who's,
you don't remember who spoke it? Okay. And he didn't even want to, when he was called for meals, he didn't even want to come. He was like, I'm busy.
No, that's Prahlad.
Okay, that's Prahlad, sorry.
Canto
2? Chapter 2.
2, 3, 15.
Oh, you can look it up right now. The beginning of the last chapter. Maharaj Parikshit, and who's speaking this? O learned Sutta Goswami, please continue to explain such topics to us, because we are all eager to hear. Besides that, topics which result in the discussion of the Lord Hari should certainly be discussed in the assembly of devotees. Maharaj Parikshit, the grandson of the Pandavas, was from his very childhood a great devotee of the Lord. Even while playing with dolls, he used to worship Lord Krishna by imitating the worship of the family deity. Next verse, Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, was also full in transcendental knowledge and was a great devotee of Lord Krishna, son of Vasudeva. So there must have been discussion of Lord Krishna, who was glorified by great philosophers and in the company of great devotees. Thank you.
That was
2, 3, 15. There's probably something also in. Anyway, we still like it. All right, so I'll open it up for discussion, and I know there's going to be a lot more to bring out from all of this. Anybody? Yes.
Thank you for your class, Guruji. Can you please elaborate on the
the point which you say that when you take possessions of something, you restrict the flow. And also if you can list the four defects of the conditioned soul and elaborate on that, please.
All right.
Thank you.
When Krishna speaks through us, let's take this back a few steps. Later on in the 10th canto, there's a verse that says, hearing discussions of the Bhagavatam, discussions about Krishna, are beneficial for three people: the person speaking, the person who asks questions, and the audience. And in the commentary to that, Vishwanath says, it's certainly beneficial for everyone to hear about Krishna. The person who asks the question gets even more benefit because they're more involved in it. The person who gets the most benefit is the one speaking. So when I'm doing a Bhagavatam discussion, I try to keep it a discussion to give everyone the opportunity to speak something. Or when I'm speaking to new people, visiting the temple for the first time, or showing some interest, I'll show them a little bit, and I'll try to get them to say, what are you getting from this? What do you understand from this? Because really, they're going to forget everything I said. They're just going to remember, I heard some really cool stuff. I don't remember anything about it. But whatever they say, they're going to remember that. Or if they asked a question, they're going to remember, I asked this question, and it was a really good question. And he said some good things. I don't remember any of it, but the question was really good. And that's what you're going to carry home with you, is whatever you speak. And so, also, when you're speaking about Krishna, when you just get so involved in it, neurologists, I talk to all kinds of people. That's a fun thing about getting out and preaching and distributing books and staying up late at night talking to strangers about Bhagavad Gita and stuff, and you get into their life. And there's a neurologist, and we were talking about neurology, he brought out this scale model regulation weight brain that he could pull apart, and he said, this part does this, this part does this, and said, this part here is where the speech happens. And so, you know, they put all those little things on you, and then they can watch how, okay, conversation going on, this thing lights up, words start coming out. But when someone really gets into a deep conversation, at some point, these things don't light up anymore. They don't know where the words are coming from. You're speaking from your heart. You're getting so involved in what you're talking about. Words are coming from somewhere else. So when you get into a Bhagavatam discussion and it's like that, you don't know where the words are coming from. This stuff's not firing up. It's coming from somewhere else. Then that's where you're getting Krishna darshan through your own speech. And it's really exciting. Like on book distribution, like, how did that guy just walk up to me? I'm nobody special. So when we're, let's see. So as soon as we take possession of it, like, I'm really cool, that guy walked up to me. No, Krishna's just going to cut off that connection. Yoga means connection. We want to link up to Krishna. Ahankara, false ego, is what blocks us from being connected to Krishna. Ahankara is what makes us identify with our body, our skills. In this purport, we could just read this purport a dozen times and still squeeze out more stuff from it. Can you put it back up? It's the third sentence. The senses of the individual being are not his own. The devotee knows that such senses belong to the Supreme Lord and that they can be properly used when they are employed for the service of the Lord. Okay, he's still working on it. Go ahead, keep trying. We're gonna do more things with that. The word Rishikesham Anusmritya, that's in the verse. Rishikesham, the master of the senses, Anusmritya. Shukadeva Goswami remembered Rishikesh. Now, he's someone like... Okay, when we read the last sentence, go down to the last sentence. No one is free to act freely and independently. That's like, oh no. Like, if you're a new devotee, you look at that and like, oh no, this sounds really restricting. No one is free to act freely and independently. And as such, one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. It sounds a bit restricting. And how can you, like, have a natural flow of conversation? But you look at someone like Prabhupada, and he, like what Mukhya read earlier, you know, the devotee pouring water in the bottom of the upside-down cup, and Prabhupada just, what is this? And he just kind of made a joke out of it. With practice, it becomes more natural for us. In the beginning, it seems a little restricted, like a new devotee, like a new brahmacharya, like, I'm not going to talk to women, I'm not going to think of women. And it's difficult. But then it becomes natural, then they start to like, okay, I can talk to women, but not the way I used to. I can look at them, but not the way I used to. I look at them, I speak to them in service. When we were hardcore brahmacharis, we would go out and talk to women distributing books, and it was like entirely different. We were looking at them eye to eye, face to face, speaking words, sharing stuff, but it was for the purpose of getting them interested in the book. It was very different from the way we used to talk to women with an agenda, a motive. So to not have any kind of agenda, to be entirely free from ahankara, and it's the way to get there is one is free to act freely and independently, and as such one should always seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. But then the second half of the sentence is where we get the freedom. When you do that, when we become accustomed to acting in that way, we get so much freedom, like those beautiful, that chapter of Narada Muni and those last few purports toward the end where Prabhupada talks about freedom. Everyone wants freedom. We want to be free to, I think he says something like, fly in the sky unlimitedly. But we're stuck on earth because of our attachments, because we're hanging on to things, we're restricting the flow. But Narada Muni, he's just free. He's just playing his veena and traveling around. He's free to speak to anyone and everyone because he's pleased Krishna. So then the second half of that sentence, and by the blessing of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. So that's a really strong statement. Thanks for bringing that up. The four defects are to commit mistakes, to misapprehension. That's, what's the word he uses for that one?
Cheating.
Well, cheating is in there, yeah.
Illusion.
Illusion, yeah. Okay. Commit mistakes, subject to illusion, cheating propensity, and what was
imperfect senses.
Okay. All right. Imperfect senses sounds so close to subject to illusion. You know, you look at something and it appears to be something else, but that's, it's something else entirely. I guess, yeah, you could read words and see, okay, this means this, but no, it's an illusion, it actually means this. So because we're subject to illusion, I guess that's why we have the Vedas, but we need the spiritual master to explain them to us, because we could read them and get an entirely different meaning. How's that for subject to illusion, as different from imperfect senses? I'll leave it open to our pundits here. What do you think? I've always puzzled over the difference between those two.
Between what?
Subject to illusion,
yeah,
and imperfect senses.
There's an overlap for sure.
Well, I just explained it in a way that kind of...
Say it again. I just signed a quote about the...
Oh, okay.
The need of the spirit soul.
The what?
The spirit soul to free light in the spirit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's hear that. Read that.
Okay, this is a purport to Bhagavatam 1.2.8. The need of the spirit soul, purport, like second, third paragraph down. He wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, personality of Godhead.
Yeah, good stuff. That session is just so rich. Also in this writing here, in this section of Second Canto, when I'm taking people through here, I'm kind of like a Bhagavatam tour guide. Over the last 15 years, I've gotten all of these groups over the phone, people who have never read Bhagavatam before, and I'll just take them by the hand and walk them through there. And it's kind of like a tour guide. First we'd fly over it like helicopter over the Grand Canyon, and then we come back, and now we're going to drill down, take soil samples, and look at the... and just show you how rich and deep the texture is in this. So to look at what's going on in Prabhupada's life while he's writing this, and his purports throughout the first and second canto were hand-typed. And there's, all of his writing is beautiful throughout the rest of it. And I think, you know, we could give that comparison, perfect, more perfect, and most perfect, like Krishna in Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. He's most perfect. So Prabhupada's writing, even Prabhupada said, I put everything in that first canto, in that first volume, typed out by hand on scraps of paper, sitting in his room at the Radhajamadar temple, and he just poured everything into it. And so, most perfect. Of course, they're all most perfect. But then after the second canto, that's when he gets the dictaphone. And so he speeds up the process. It's still beautiful. But the hand-type stuff, it just seems even more rich in texture. And the sentences are more complex. I mean, still I'm amazed by the stuff he writes later on. And then our Bhagavatam group, we studied last year around Janmashtami. We said, okay, we're going to study now the 10th canto up to, you know, everything that Prabhupada translated, just to get ready for Janmashtami. And we read that, and that was like, oh man. And then the very last little volume, that thin volume, we were reading that. It was just, how is he doing this? It's so good. And you see the little movie clip of him reciting, lying on his back. Everything is acting, moving, or the supreme direction of Krishna. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. And if you look up that verse where he's speaking that, it's not just, you know, like some light stuff. It's really, it's a very deep explanation of, so similar to what we're about to, you know, all these questions that Maharaj Pariksit asked. It's a very deep, detailed explanation of what Brahma saw, all the different elements, all serving Krishna. Oh man. How did that go? And it was concepts of, let's see, man, I had the Yeah, you could look it up, but I don't remember the number. I don't remember the verse number. But it's Brahma. It's Brahma.
Brahma stole the cow.
Yeah. And after he sees all of the Vishnu forms, you know, all the cowherd boys assuming Vishnu forms, and then all the living entities are dancing around them, offering prayers. And then the verse talks about endeavor, the five things that people do. Endeavor, the senses. I don't know if you're going to find it with that. And yeah, if we were to open that up, I'll save it for next class, I guess. But that's what it looks like to break free from the walls of the covered universe and feel the freedom. So that's when we give ourselves entirely. And so Shukadeva Goswami is already in the habit of doing that. So here he's going to give prayers. So we get to see what that looks like, how someone who's already there offers prayers. Oh man, it's already 9:00. And the four defects, I covered what they are, but yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I have a couple of comments. One about the that sentence where Prabhupada says the devotees seek the permission of the Lord to act or eat. Like last night's Sunday feast lecture was on the verse Yat Karosi Yat Ajnasi, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away should be done as an offering unto the Lord. So I was thinking that might be a place.
Yeah, thank you. Who gave the class last night?
Sukada. Pushkar's wife, Sukada.
Okay, yeah, I was talking with some new guests. They were here for the first time.
And right. And then my concept when you said what's the difference between imperfect senses and illusion, what came in my mind was we're in illusion thinking that we're the controller and enjoyer of everything. Uh-huh. So that might
under a misconception. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Right. And the one more thing that now then you were talking about the perfect, most, more perfect and most perfect, that he has the dictaphone and the later cantos and so it goes much more quickly. But one of my favorite anecdotes is when Prabhupada was in Honolulu, and the dictaphone, you know, it has digits to record, to count how much he recorded. So one morning, after he'd been up translating, one of the devotees asked him, "How many digits did you do last night, Srila Prabhupada?" And he said, "Oh, I can translate very quickly, but it takes great concentration how to present it for the common man." So that's also most perfect from my point of view.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and in Hawaii, our group, we just finished the 8th canto last week. Oh no, he wasn't in Hawaii, he was in Delhi. And so he writes a little note at the end, "Thus completed on July 29th. 1976 in Delhi, and then I said, "Whoa!" 2 days later, I got he wrote the letter with my initiation letter from Delhi, and so it's like, cool. So now it gave me some idea what he was doing at that time. But in our reading group, there's this one guy who joined us last year, and he just passed away on Wednesday from a heart attack. I never got to meet him in real life, but he just sent me this odd email. I don't know how he got my email address. He said, "I'd like to join the Hare Krishna movement." And so I was wondering, like, is this guy okay? Like, so I sent a few letters. We had a few emails back and forth trying to figure out, is this guy really, like, okay? And I still wasn't sure, but after a week of that, I said, "Why don't you join our Bhagavatam calls?" So he got on, and he was on every single night, and he would join every online meeting that he could all around the world. He didn't sleep much. He would join at 2:00 in the morning. He would join devotees chanting japa in Australia, and Yeah, whatever he could. He would report back to me, sending emails after emails. Here's all the notes I took from the class from you know, whatever. And so he would join, and we would read Bhagavatam for an hour and a half. Every time we would end a chapter, he would thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports. He'd always put his hands up like, yeah, we did it. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the second canto, chapter 3. And when we finished chapter 8, a canto 8, he got so excited, he jumped up. And even though he has heart problems. And so he missed a couple classes. And I thought, okay. And so his brother interrupted our class on a Thursday night and said, my brother Jack was always trying to get me to join these meetings. He had high regard for you and the subject matter. And so Jack, we gave him the name Jagannath, just as like, yeah, I figured he's all alone in his room. He's kind of disabled. He can't get anywhere. He's already chanting 16 rounds. And I just said, we're going to call you Jagannath. You could take that for whatever you want. And he was, yeah, he was right in there. All right, so, and it was just good having him there, someone who's just so hungry to hear. So, anything else? I know I'm over time, I'm sorry. Yes?
I just wanted to mention that you were talking about when this was, Prabhupada had written this. In few verses ahead, Prabhupada writes in the purport about International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
Oh, he did. He already mentioned
it. A few verses in Kirata Hunanda,
Pulinda Purkash,
a few verses ahead. So it was written here, and the International Society was already, I guess, incorporated by that time.
Oh, good. Okay. How did I miss that?
I think I'm right. I'm supposed to do class in that, and that's how I know
that verse,
it's been in Kirata Hunanda.
Niranjan Swami, I heard him give a talk on that verse, and one of the things he said was most commentators on Bhagavatam speak to the individual practitioner, but Prabhupada speaks to the whole world, especially on that verse.
Hmm. They didn't have a chant. I mean, in those days, they didn't think that there was a mass communication. There was no mass communication, so they weren't.
What do you call it? It's the introduction or the preface? The preface to the Bhagavatam. We must know the present need of human society. And what is that need? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. So he was recognizing there is, human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. So he's recognizing that there is mass communication, and so he's saying, we're going to use that, Srimad Bhagavatam. All this mass communication is meant for Srimad Bhagavatam. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, of the entire energy of living beings. What are you showing me? Oh, all right. This is going to take a while to unpack this. All right, so here, oh man. Maybe I'll just say class dismissed. And anyone that wants to sit and listen to this, this is that video you see of Prabhupada lying on his back, you're holding the dictaphone, you can barely hear his voice. This is the verse. This is the purport. Then Lord Brahma saw that kala, the time factor, swabhava, one's own nature, samskara, reformation, kama, desire, karma, fruit of activity, and the gunas, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord, had all taken forms and were also worshipping those Vishnu Murtis. Prabhupada takes each one of those and describes each one of those weaves it all in and makes this beautiful conclusion purport. Okay, now, picture Prabhupada, hardly any energy. Just with a light breath, he's speaking. No one, so I'll say it really soft. No one but Vishnu. No one but Vishnu has any independence. No one but Vishnu has any independence. If we develop consciousness of this fact, then we are in actual Krishna consciousness. Okay. Just those two sentences, you could just meditate on that for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Because Krishna's two-handed form is superior than Vishnu form, right? So why he displayed Vishnu form to Brahma instead of displaying his own two-handed forms in multiple...
Yeah, that's persons. A real good question, and I don't have a ready answer for you. Let's just get into this right now.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. That is a good question. We're trying to get to the point where Prabhupada says everything... Oh, here we go. No one... A little later on, he quotes, Ekale Ishwara Krishna, Ara Savagritya. One should understand that no one is independent, for everything is part and parcel of Krishna and is acting and moving by the supreme desire of Krishna. This understanding, this consciousness, is Krishna consciousness. And he quotes, Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahmarudrari Daivatai Samat Vinayava Viksheta Sapashandi Bhavedruvam. Even with That's just like such a aggressive verse. Sa pashande bhavedruvam. If you think that Brahma and Shiva are as good as Vishnu, you are a pashande, a non-believer. Prabhupada's even lying in that condition, he's still aggressive. Thank you. Amen. So, if anyone wants to read this, where's the text number? Kala Swabhava. What's the text number? I don't see it on here. Canto 10, chapter 13, verse 53. And, yeah, when our Bhagavatam group, we came up to the very last verse in chapter 13, and we said, all right, we're reading the last purport translated and published by Srila Prabhupada. And we read the last sentence and everybody cried. It was it was good. So we want to have affection. Some people ask, you know, have you seen Krishna? Do you love Krishna? And honestly, I can say, well, I love the Bhagavatam. I feel competent to say that. And through the Bhagavatam, yes, we love Krishna. So fall in love with the book. That's something tangible. We can do that. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.